I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
The words to describe my next guest are present, wise, sage-like, loving, inclusive, listener, joyous, strong, and beautiful. I met Phyllis Haynes a few years ago at a conference for seasoned coaches, and she's one of those very rare people who command attention without asking for it. She brings her deep listening to every interaction, and when you're around her, you feel something that we've all gotten used to not feeling: being heard. As Phyllis will share, when we really listen, we produce a space for all people and points of view to explore themselves and their ideas in a safe environment. The doorway to intuition is listening, and Phyllis is a master at it. She's also a very gifted interviewer, and her background is testament to this. She's an award-winning producer and media personality. She has served as a media and communications advisor for organizations and corporations in the United States and Europe. She has worked for the last 25 years to help create inclusive environments in institutions including Citibank, the NCAA, AT&T, Ernst & Young, and many, many others. Currently, she produces and hosts Profund TV, which airs out of PrincetonTV.org, and she's got a huge following on social media. She's a member of Jack Canfield's Transformational Leadership Council, and she's on the board of the Coach Initiative. So think how your business, team, marriage, or friendship would improve if you learned to be present, to really listen inside to your intuition, and to outside to those around you. Phyllis Haynes on the Business of Intuition. So Phyllis, thank you very much for being on the show here. And I just wanted to start off, since you've got such a vast background in communication and it's been such a big part of your career, in a world that we are so overloaded with so much information coming at us, what makes a good communicator in this environment?
I think the most profoundly important skill is listening. There's so much coming at us that I think instead of being focused on what you want to say, it's probably you're most effective as a communicator if you're engaged in listening. So for me, being interviewed is a challenge because what I do mostly is I really listen. I'm kind of known for not interrupting and listening very carefully to where the conversation is going to go. It's challenging to be interviewed when you have a focus on listening. And yet listening to oneself is also crucial. I do a lot of diversity and inclusion work as well. And in that work, listening is also very important to find where the common ground is, to find out where the learning needs to be. So I would say, of all the things you need right now in the 21st century, it's an ability to listen to others and to also listen deeply to your own inner voices and your own mechanisms so that you know consciously what you're putting out into the universe.
It's a great way of, I want to ask you about listening to yourself here in a second, but when you were talking about finding common ground, talk a little bit about the intention behind the listening. You know, in coaching, and as I know, we know each other through the coaching world, or could you describe a little bit more about what you listen for and how that informs the conversation?
Well, let me say it's a skill, first of all, to truly listen. Most people, when you say what you listen for, if you really work with people and you do some exercises, you will discover that people are listening to what they're going to say next, or they're listening for what they already know. They have a sort of, it's not a bias, it's just the way we're kind of wired. We listen for what we're familiar with. So listening in itself needs some work, and I have to work at it all the time to really take myself out of the equation and listen purely at what's coming at me. So that takes skill. So that's the first thing. I'm listening for my own intrusion. I'm listening to make sure I'm not putting myself in the answer. And then I'm listening for possibility. I'm listening to see where the speaker or the speakers or the situation wants to take me. So I am literally working to understand what's coming at me and being an open receptacle. And Krishnamurti, who has this wonderful sounding guru name, but who's just kind of an old Indian philosopher, talked about attention and being present. You're a master at understanding this already. I have to work at being very present. That makes me a much more effective listener, because you can be easily distracted. I don't know if you ever did you ever have to learn how to type?
Yes. With the old typewriters.
Right. When I was learning how to type in seventh grade, we had this wonderful teacher who said she was going to give us a final exam. And in the final typing exam, we were all ready to go. And we're sitting there typing, you know, there's a moving screen and you're typing what's on the moving screen. All of a sudden, this woman rushes into the room, dressed as a witch, screaming at us. And the people who did well in the exam were those who kept typing and were not distracted by this woman with a tall hat and horrible makeup screaming at us. So that was the first lesson in being present. And then, of course, there were many, many more that came over the years as I studied with various teachers, gurus, not typing teachers. So that I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
I'm listening to get myself out of the way. And then to find common ground, it's listening so that if I do ask a question, I'm asking a question that's purely a jewel out of what the person has said, as opposed to where I wanted to go. Now, understand, I've also done television interviewing and political interviewing. And so sometimes you have to ask a question that isn't necessarily fitting in that category. And so there you're listening for an opening, or you're listening for a clever way to make a change. So, you know, it's a challenge to be a good communicator in this time.
You know, Phyllis, as I listen to you and I pick up on your energy in this conversation, you appear to me to be very much focused on the present. And as I am listening to you, my ability, my sense of presence is improving. I find myself, and I want to ask this question because I want to see if you find this with other people, that because you seem to be so present to me right now, I am now much more focused on whether or not I am present, because you sort of are the example. I can sort of feel myself coming down to, all right, how is this feeling? Am I really paying attention? Am I really listening to what Phyllis is saying? Do you notice that good listening begets good listening, or good listening begets good present moment experience in the other person?
So there's good news and bad news in my answer.
Okay, give me the good news first.
The good news is that when we really listen to someone, the other person experiences something they don't usually experience. Most of us do not experience being listened to.
Agreed.
So that's the gift that occurs. The other person, I love this Yiddish word, kvels. If you're from New York or Brooklyn, you'll know the word. It's an experience of being filled with a sense of peace and joy. Mm. And the other person who is being listened to realizes you're really listening. And it's such a gift. Doesn't even matter if you agree or not agree, that you're really listening is the gift. That's the good news. Bad news is if your consciousness is about yourself, on any level, you're still got a little work to do.
Yeah.
Because you're still thinking about, well, am I listening? Am I really listening? That's still, the focus is still on you. Which is the answer is, if you're yes. not focused on yourself, then you're really listening. So there was a teacher who said, if you're not really able to listen yet, but you do, and you can't do this in an audio interview, is just, you just count the eyelashes on the person who's talking to you. That'll be the first step in getting away from yourself. But I think I came prepared to talk about intuition, so now I'm kind of lost. Because
yeah, well, but the topic is, though, connected. I do believe that the access into intuition is exactly what you just described, being present and listening. And that's the second part of what you said earlier, was not just to listen to the other person, but to listen to yourself. Yes. And by listening to yourself and be present and open to possibility, as you had just so wonderfully described, now we have access to what you might call the intuitive, that pattern recognizer. So I do think it's connected. And my next question then is, why don't we always communicate that intuition? What is it, even though if I go in and I figure out, okay, this is, I've got an intuition here after being present, why don't I always share that? What's your sense about that?
I'm not going to answer your question so easily. I will say to you that when I have ever been called an intuitive in my life, it has usually been an insult. That there is a, for me, those of you who are listening may not realize I'm an African-American woman. There is associated with being an intuitive as being less academic or less intellectual. And so whenever I've done or given an answer that doesn't fit the particular known model, the other person or other teachers may come back and say, well, that's intuition. That's not really science. That's not really facts. That's anecdotal. I did a lot of corporate training work in diversity and inclusion, and all of a sudden, I was given extraordinary, wonderful responses to the work being done. And then there was a shift in the industry where everything had to be quantified. And so intuition suddenly was not valued. Whereas I think when speaking with people or sharing information, that your ability to engage in intuition, pattern recognition, reading the environment, reading beneath, between the lines, is the strongest possible thing. Now, you're right on the most important work to be done in your work, because if you're going to put all different kinds of people together, what you really need is an ability to recognize patterns, to read between the lines, to see what is not being said, and not to rely totally on quantifiable evidence. That's a real strength. I'm not sure that the industries we serve are really ready to accept intuition as a valuable skill. If you're at the top of your game like Elon Musk, you can be praised for your intuitive skill. But if you're a person working up the ladder, you may be discounted if they think you're using intuition as your as a skill.
I totally agree with you on that. And that's probably, quite frankly, personally, one reason why I want to do this podcast. I want to get intuition out of the closet and into the boardroom. I want to be able to have this become something that's a viable, neuroscience-based, backed skill set that will improve a variety of things in human interaction, including how we do business. And part of the thing you just said that I also wanted just to underline is, yes, the higher up one goes, you are afforded the luxury of being intuitive and you can be praised for it. But when we have organizations, you've been in them, I've been in them, that say things like, we make decisions based on data and fact. Data-based decision-making skills, that's what we want to actually promote. Then the individual, who may not necessarily be the subject matter expert, has a strong feeling about something but can't speak up because their intuition isn't valued in that context. And I absolutely agree with you on that. But I do think that the more we talk about it, I'm hoping that this will become less of a taboo subject and more valued.
Let me talk about it from the perspective of my second career. My first career was broadcasting, 25 years on television daily, some days with Peter Jennings. I was on ABC Network nationally and internationally. That was great work. Then I started to hit the glass ceiling there and fell in love with this work called diversity and inclusion. I also still make videos and film and do keep my hand in the field. And yet I was pulled into this other work because there are whole groups of people who have a set of skills that have not been recognized. So intuition is among those things. And the height of inclusion and diversity work really has to do with what happens if you're on a team and you want to create and you want to get to something innovative and you really want to make it fly. It's the ability of including all of those people in the equation and how to include them. So that's another program. We can go into that when we have perhaps a second discussion in the future. It's really recognizing that there's some people who bring intuition into the doorway. They've survived by being able to read the patterns. Women haven't always been at the top, so some of them have even greater intuitive skills. Now, we could argue about this, but there is a lot of argument that the people who've been slightly underneath the power grid have had to use intuition to survive. And therefore, they bring into the creative process a kind of seeing that may not be present all around. Now, there's also great skills in every single group. It's the power of what Edward Hall, who wrote The Silent Language and Beyond Culture, talked about. It's a combination of low context and high context thinking. And again, there isn't enough time in 30 minutes to talk about what that is. But essentially, the people who've had to operate underneath the grid have had to read the environment to survive. Mm. And they bring those skills into the creative process. And the combination of both sides is very powerful. So I have a partner who's Asian, and she and I together really worked powerfully because our styles were different, our ways of seeing were different. And there's such a gift out there if we could get over our differences, if we could really start seeing. And you have this, Dean, I've seen you in a room. You have this ability to see difference and work with people of different backgrounds. It's a gift and it's a skill. I'm preaching. Please interrupt me.
No, but that's a great, thank you for that. And you said gift and skill, so I'll take the compliment, but is this something that can be trained, developed? And if so, how?
Yes, it can be trained. Yes, it's a question of, once you recognize, I don't want to use the word deficit, once you recognize the unwritten rules of the place in which you occupy, you can learn those. So for example, if you are interfacing with a bunch of intuitive-based people or people who have had to use it more, you can develop a listening skill. It goes back to the beginning of our conversation. To listen to how they listen and what their unwritten rules are. I can give you an example rather than the whole answer to how, because it would take too long to talk about the how. The example is, there are groups of people who have been raised to believe that when someone asks you a question, that the best person in the room will stand up on their feet and answer right away and give you and shoot from the hip. That's considered a really skillful, bright person. Now, if you start listening and seeing that there are people who are not saying anything, and you learn that that doesn't mean that they don't know the answer, but that they have a different value system. Their value system is, if I speak, I will be stuck with those words for my entire life, that the power of my speaking does not go away, and that shooting from the hip is a deficit. Hmm. Now, I'm just giving you two extremes, the guy who shoots from the hip and the person who believes that waiting to think out your thoughts and speak carefully is the greatest value. Both may have the right answer, but both are coming at it from different value systems. So you will learn to observe that there are all kinds of people who may have brilliant answers. So if you're managing a team of people who have these different values on speaking, and you're trying to get your team to really operate at a high level and come up with that innovative product, you'll stop listening only to the first speakers. You start listening to the people who are waiting to speak, and you'll make it possible to hear the unspoken. You'll make it possible and make it safe. This is a new word in our conversation. I believe safety and intuition need to be side by side. Mm. You want that intuitive mind to show up? You need to make it safe, not just for the guys and gals who can shoot from the hip. Now, I'm one of those who had to learn. You see, I'm speaking about myself. I had to learn to wait for the person who was thinking out, waiting. I had to wait for my Asian partners, I had more than one actually, to grapple with the information. And when I was patient, boy, did I get jewels. Boy, did I get gifts. Boy, did we come up with an extraordinary concept or contract if we were negotiating. Because that first guy who's shooting from the hip with the quick answer isn't the only way to get there. Now, there's nothing wrong with that kind of brilliant answer. That's one way. And the people on the other side had to get used to me and also had to learn, hey, here's a person who can think quickly and come up with an answer, and there's power in that. So our world has work to do, but intuition will survive when we recognize that there are different ways of getting to an answer. And when we learn to listen for that, we're going to have some heck of a world.
I love your perspective. How can a listener who is a team leader create the environment, maybe through some sort of agreements, but how do you create the space, that sacred space, so that what you just described can unfold, that we become more patient to the second person versus not just the first? What other questions or their agreements that you've used in the past with your clients that have helped create that sacred space for that kind of listening that you just described?
You're far ahead in the game because your question shows that you see that there's an agreement involved. But the first thing is to recognize that it's a little painful. For some people, this will be a painful thing because you're asking them to be patient. You're asking them to wait for an answer. So that's the first crucial step, to recognize in yourself how you're feeling. So when I started working in this work, it was painful. Why? Because I have a lot of fast answers. I know a lot of stuff. I want to get it out there. That's the way I grew up. Get your hand up first in the classroom. Be the first to get to the top. But after a while, I started learning that waiting for my partners and others that I worked with a lot of Asians and Asian Americans. When I learned to wait and be patient, I saw a whole new universe of thinking, a new way. So that's the first step. The second thing is the agreement that you're talking about. You need to make your team aware. If you're the team leader, you need to come up with a way so when you're speaking in a meeting, you don't just recognize the fast speakers like me. You say, you may gently let the people know, I'm going to be calling on you. I notice that you don't speak in the meetings. Before the meeting starts, I'm going to let you know that I'm going to be calling on you. I'm not looking for the right answers. I want your voice to be heard. You need to let them know that you're going to call on them. And you're going to let other people know that this is a meeting of inclusion. And you're going to make inclusion. Now, here's the tricky part. You will make inclusion a value. So the team person who is inclusive in his speaking will be more highly valued than the person who's saying, I did this and I did that. Now, this is a real departure from how we have been raised in the United States. And I'm not trying to throw this out. The I mean, my father, African-American, was aware of this thing. You know, he says, you've got to learn to be an individual. You've got to make sure that they know that you did this work. Well, yeah, but now we need to say, you need to recognize your partner on the team who may not have been as vocal as you, but who made a contribution. And that recognition will be rewarded. So not only you'll be rewarded for saying what you did, but for being inclusive in your behavior as a team member. I hope this is, you know, this is too much for 30 minutes, dude.
Oh, no, it's right where we need to be. Is there other things, Phyllis, aside from the richness of listening to somebody, mm-hmm. that then reinforces, rewards those who also did the generous listening, but those who maybe were second to speak up? Like, how do we call it out?
No, not necessarily calling it out. You make an agreement, like I gave you a demonstration.
Yes.
You say, I'm going to be calling on you in the meeting.
Yes.
Building relationship with such people is very important. Here's an example. You and I set a time to do this work. If I were what I'd call a high context individual, I probably would have needed maybe 20 minutes earlier so that we could chit chat before starting. Because I am low context, I can get down to business right away. Start the interview, let's start talking. But if there were a person who operated with that kind of thoughtful process that we've often discounted as shy, which is not shyness, it's a different set of ground rules, you give them more time. You say, if you say your door is always open, they'll never walk through your door. You need to invite them in, sit down, and have conversations. It seems like a subtle change, but it's a huge change. Especially if you're the higher level person, you need to make it safe for people to give you feedback. In today's workplace, there's an expectation. You see a problem, you say something about it. Well, but there are ground rules in other places where you never question authority. You have to make it safe for that person to give you feedback. Now, what happens often when there's no training and there's no work in this area, people who are given that new freedom to give feedback to the boss often go too far because they haven't got ground rules as to what the boss's expectations. I mean, there's flaws on both sides of this equation.
Yeah.
There's got to be learning on what are the expectations. This is how I work. This is how I like information. Things that we take for granted in our interaction. You and I could go into business because we have a similar style and we know what the ground rules are, but we're unusual. You're less likely to find two people similar today in today's work environment. You need to have the ability to make it safe and say what your expectations are. And that takes a little extra time. And that's difficult for our very fast-paced business environment. But there are places where this works.
I really agree with that. So on a personal level, is there an example or a story you could share when you made an intuitive decision and it was one of those big pivots in your life?
There are several times. I've been a closet intuitive for life. I've had to wrap intuition into academic language in order to get through the day sometimes. I don't know that I have a story that I really want to share publicly, but okay. Let's see. I'll take you back to my television days,
okay,
where often a lot of celebrities coming through, and they were often very gracious and glad to be on the show. And it was I had an hour long show called Straight Talk on WOR-TV coming out of New York. And a guy named Trevor Howard, an old actor, showed up on the show, and he sat opposite me and threw one leg over a chair and kind of looked back, looking up at the ceiling. And while we were live on the air, I said, "You don't want to be here."
Hmm.
There are standard questions that you ask major celebrities because they have very little time and you have them for very little time. But he looked at me and he said, "You're right. I really don't want to be here. I've done enough of this in my career." It was one of the best interviews. I had a second experience. Some of you may know the artist who's now deceased, Robert Indiana, who was known for creating that very famous love sculpture with L-O-V-E.
Yes.
Paintings, sculptures, a whole bunch of things came out of that. And I had him on the air and I said, "Now, I need to know, is that the work that you really want to be known for? Was that your best work?" His eyes lit up. No one had ever asked him that question. He said, "Absolutely not. That was not my best work. That is the work I am known for. But I have so much better work than that I value." And this kind of, and these are the decision to ask this kind of question, I would put in the realm of intuition. Mm. And it's the same thing in business and closing contracts, because as an entrepreneur, there's that moment when you know you either have a yes or you don't. You can't use any kind of quantification to come to that answer. When you know you've got the job or the person's going to hire you. Intuition in all of those circumstances has been extremely valuable. Now, I will say that that can be learned, however. I don't think that that is just because I'm a woman or an African American. I think it comes from having had enough experiences. That's why so many entrepreneurs who've had challenges seem to do better than those entrepreneurs who've had one big hit. The guys who you really study have had a few failures or a few disappointments tend to do very well. So I think intuition comes from recognizing certain subtle patterns more effectively over and over again and bringing that to your current situation, being present and listening for the opportunity.
So this next and maybe last question might be a bit of a redundant one. What's the message that you want to communicate?
I would say if this were my last interview ever, it's such a dramatic question. I would say that the silences, which sometimes are scary in life, may be the most powerful moments we ever have. Hmm. I'm married to a lovely man. We've been together 23 years. And he said to me he married me because I didn't keep him on the telephone. It was the ability to live with the silences that keeps us happy. And I think it's the basis for a good partnership. Not to assume that the silence is a problem, but to ask, "Is there something you'd like to tell me?"
Well, Phyllis, thank you. This has just been great. If somebody here would like to stay connected to you or your work, how would they do that?
It's easy to find me. I'm all over the place. I would like them to go to HaynesMediaWorks.com. I also have a show that I run called Profunda TV out of Princeton. Mm. And they can also just email you, Dean, because you know how to find me.
Yes. Phyllis, thank you for your presence and your insights. Just wonderful. It's so nice to reconnect with you.
Thank you for the privilege of being with you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.